And welcome to Circle Talk Radio, part of the Circle Sanctuary Radio Ministry Program, along with the Nature Magic Program hosted by the Reverend Selena Fox every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Join us here on Tuesdays following Selena's Nature Magic Program at 9 p.m. Eastern as we discuss various topics of interest to the pagan community. Circle Talk Radio is hosted on alternating weeks by Circle Sanctuary Ministers Jeanette and David Ewing and Circle Minister Deborah Rose. Before we begin, we would like to express our thanks to the Witches School International and their Pagans Tonight Radio Networks for allowing Circle Sanctuary to present our programming. For more information about Circle Sanctuary, please visit us on the web at www.circlesanctuary.org and visit the Witches School International at their website at www.witchschool.com. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening. And tonight on Circle Talk, we have one of the presenters that was going to be one of the main presenters at PSG this year, Laura Gonzalez. And Laura Gonzalez is a pagan who lives in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. And she reads tarot. She's a leader in the pagan community, specifically with the Latin American pagan community out in Chicago. And she also does a variety of things, including doing tarot readings at one of the local coffee houses on a regular basis. As people are probably well aware by now, this year's Pagan Spirit Gathering had to end early because of excessive rains and flooding. And Laura was able to teach one of the three workshops that she was going to be leading, but was not able to do the other two. So tonight she is going to be talking about two of the other workshops she was going to be leading, and one of them is on Dia de los Muertos, otherwise known as Day of the Dead, and Tarot as a Healing Tool, or Tarot for Life. So let's go ahead and bring Laura on.
Right. And we also want to mention that Laura was a co-host to the Pagans Tonight in Spanish program here on Pagans Tonight for some time, which had a widespread reach amongst the Spanish-speaking pagan community worldwide. It was really amazing to see how many people were listening in the conversations and stuff and where they were coming from. So we'd like to say hello to Laura. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
We are good here in Northern Virginia. I heard on our way home from Green Spirit Gathering at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve this past weekend, we had left, I guess, just at the right time because as we were driving back east, Chicago got some pretty bad weather that Sunday evening, I'd heard.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Most of it happened on the northeast side of the city, kind of like on Rogers Park and Skokie. I heard it was really, really bad. There was people posting pictures and all that. We had a little bit of rain, and we had a lot of thunder and a lot of lightning happening. But here, I live on the near South Loop area, and it wasn't that bad. We had rain for a few minutes, and then it just went away. It was very cloudy and very windy. It was kind of cool, but, you know, if you're in the middle of it, as they were on Rogers Park and Skokie, it's not that cool. It could be kind of scary. But still, nature, you know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, you got to be able to roll with the punches with that. So, we are talking tonight with Laura, and we're going to start off by talking about the origins of Day of the Dead. And mm-hmm. As a pagan, I did not always incorporate that aspect into my particular Samhain practices. I learned more about it over the years and really became interested in that as someone who does have a parent who was Mexican. My mom was Mexican, and I just started getting really interested in finding out more about that and what the connections were and what the origins were. So increasingly over the years, I have incorporated some aspects of that into our Samhain practice. But so let's go ahead and start at, well, let's start at the beginning. Exactly what is Day of the Dead? What does that mean?
Well, to understand the dead, or the Day of the Dead, I guess we have to understand the leaving. Pardon my pronunciation. And for the people that were at PSG, and we were lucky enough to be together on the opening ritual, though it was muddy and it was kind of a crazy weather going on too over there, we were together in the opening ritual. And in my participation there, I was commenting, I was telling them about this myth of creation that involves both Quetzalcoatl as the, you know, the creator of life, the god of life, and Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlacahuatl. I'm not expecting you to repeat the names or learn them today, but we can practice together. And on that myth of creation, Quetzalcoatl goes down to the Mictlan, which is basically the underworld, and he is trying to create humanity once again, because humans have been erased from the face of Earth four times prior Quetzalcoatl's fifth try, or the fifth sun, which is the era that we're living in right now, the fifth sun. And so he goes down to the underworld and he tries to get the bones from the prior human life, so the prior the remainings of the prior humans that inhabit Earth. And, you know, Mictlantecuhtli, being the god of the underworld, says, well, it's not going to be so easy for you to just come and gather the bones. You're going to have to, you know, do a couple of trials and see if you can do it. And he tricks them into, in his way out, he tricks them. And Quetzalcoatl falls. And he had a sack of bones, and when he fell, the bones scatter on the floor. But you know, Quetzalcoatl being a god, obviously, he put them back into the sack and escaped the underworld. And he comes back to, you know, this world, and he goes with the goddess Cihuacóatl, and he puts his blood and semen on the bones and creates humanity one more time. Because the bones were scattered and they were mixed, when Quetzalcoatl puts them back together, they were uneven. And that's why we are all so different. Some of us are tall, some of us are small, some of us are thicker or thinner or whiter or darker, or, you know, different color, size, shapes. I love this myth of life because it talks about, how do you call it, you know, the diversity of humanity, which I think is pretty cool. But also talks about front and center, you know, the underworld and how life came from death. There was the remains of the prior generations or the prior people that live in the world, and without those bones there could be no life. And it's basically the concept that in order to have life, you gotta have death to have life once again, which is a concept that most pagans are not you know, too far from understanding. There's many other myths on many other cultures that also talk about the death and transformation. And obviously, many people might say, well, what does that have to do with Day of the Dead? Well, it has to do a lot, because Day of the Dead, a lot of people believe that it's a Christian tradition or that it's a Catholic tradition. And it's not. It's a tradition that comes from the Aztec, and even is believed before the Aztec. You know, the Mayans were celebrating also death and transformation. And it was seen as such, as transformation, because they did not believe that the energy that makes you and I would disappear. They believe that that energy will just be transformed into something else. Were you going to ask something?
No, no, keep going.
Oh, okay. Right. So I heard like somebody was going to talk. if you ever need to interrupt me, please do. Because otherwise I just keep talking forever. But anyway, so it is believed on that this tradition and this celebration is at least 3,000 years old. And it is very interesting because the land in which Quetzalcoatl went to gather the bones is called the Mictlan. And Mictlan is basically the underworld. But the funny thing is, when you translate Mictlan from the Aztec roots of the language, is the land where the dead live. Or the land of the living dead, you know, if you want to, but it has nothing to do with zombies, obviously. And Mictlan has 9 levels. And it's a funny thing because if you think about it, it's kind of like a reverse birth relation with the 9 months of gestation of humans. And, you know, it supposedly takes 4 years for a soul from a living person when they die. It takes them 4 years to actually reach the 9th and final level of Mictlan. And then once they're there, they just, you know, chill and wait. And they just wait to come back to life. So it's also a very strong point on if you believe in reincarnation, you know, because Mictlan will be kind of like the waiting area, you know, just waiting there to be reincarnated, for your energy to be called into creation again. In Mictlan, there are the Lord and the Lady, or the God and Goddess of the underworld, or the, you know, creators of that world. And they are just as important as the gods of creating life. And as we saw on the myth that I was telling you in the beginning, they are crucial to the creation of life. Also, what I find very interesting is the God and Goddess, you know, they live in Mictlan, Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlantecasihuatl. Sometimes they call her Mictlantecasihuatl. I know it doesn't make a difference to you, but I heard Mictlantecasihuatl first, so I'm used to call her that. And they are just as important as the gods of life. She is the queen of the Mictlan. A lot of people say, oh, she was the mistress of the God. Of course, because that's the translation that Christians and Catholics did to the ancient texts. Because every time they see a goddess, they say she's the wife of, or she is the mistress of. But the reality is that on the Aztec lore and on the Nahuatl people, Nahuatl speaking people, the female or the feminine energy, and the feminine essence was just as important as the masculine essence. So if he was the king, then she was the queen. If he was the husband, she was the wife. There's no mistress or, you know, just a helper or the female companion. She was just as important as he was. And they are very often, they're depicted as skulls or skeletons, and their hands are on a defensive gesture, kind of like a shortstop. And their faces are not as friendly because they're skulls. So, yeah, their job was kind of to scare you. You don't want to go there until it's your time to go. And also, right, they were tricked by Quetzalcoatl. So they are not going to be like, yeah, go ahead, come on in, you know.
Right.
Because they were robbed, so, but they were robbed to create humanity. So it's kind of like a cool thing. Another thing that I find very interesting is this is all mythology, right? But if you think about the metaphor of taking care of the bones of the ancestors, in our bones is our DNA. And so taking care of the bones of the ancestors is not just an easy task, you know. They're caring for humanity, and they're caring for the future of humanity. And again, without having them, there will be no future, because without that, there's no life.
Right.
So,
now, you mentioned this god and goddess, and Quetzalcoatl.
Mm-hmm.
I do know how that one is spelled. Don't ask me to spell it online, because I'm not going to. Now, these are Aztec deities. Is that right? Or are they Mayan?
No, these are Aztec. This is Aztec lore. This is all Aztec mythology, which is
okay. The
most recent one, because the Aztecs were the ones that were tricked and conquered by the Spaniards and brought all this Catholic religion into Mexico. But it is also believed in the Mayan lore. It's also believed that there was an underworld. I'm not as familiar to that mythology, because my passion has always been Aztec, and what I work with is the Aztec. And actually, she is the matron goddess that I work with since I can remember. I'm trying to spell the name so people can see it. And then we will do a test at the end of the workshop, and everybody's going to pronounce that name. It took me a whole lifetime to perfect how to pronounce it, so don't even feel bad about it. Because these are not, first of all, phonetically, we are so far away from what the Nahuatl language was on Spanish. For us who speak Spanish, this is not easy. So if you have a hard time, don't even feel bad, because it's not Spanish. It's Nahuatl.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And says I will fail.
Yeah, and that is an important distinction to make, because that is the language of the Aztec people and, well, their descendants, because it is still spoken. I know it's still spoken some places today.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it is an important thing to distinguish, because also Spanish is a Latin language, and it's done, you know, the way things are pronounced is completely different, spelled completely different, phonetically very different, verb conjugation, the whole nine yards. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is something that is, yeah, I'm sure it takes some getting used to terms of how to correctly pronounce that. So,
and I'm sure that even with my Spanish background, because I better know how to speak Spanish, you know, I'm Mexican. but with my Spanish background, even my pronunciation is not perfect, because I have been in contact with a couple of people who actually speak Nahuatl, and they say it extremely fast and it sounds beautiful, and I cannot say it that way. The one important thing, though, is so the land of their land, the land of the dead, is called Mictlan. I'm trying to type and speak at the same time. So Mictlan, Mictlan is the land of the dead. And then their names, as you can see, the first part of the name, the first syllable, if you will, Mictlan Tecutli, Mictlan Siwat, or Micteca Siwat. The first part of the pronunciation has that Mictlan name within it. And so the ending, Tecutli, means masculine, and the ending, Siwatl, means feminine.
Another thing
that is very interesting is the couple of teachers that I had from the Nahuatl teachers that I have, if they hear me call them God and Goddess, they will, like, have a big problem, because they are very adamant to tell us that these are not gods and goddesses as the Christians or Catholics understood God and Goddess. These are more, as we understand archetypes nowadays, you know how there are some pagans who actually are polytheists and believe on the existence of many gods and goddesses, and then there are other pagans who believe that each god and goddess is just an archetype manifestation of the divine.
Right.
So this is kind of like that. It's not a god and goddess, but it's more like an archetype, if you will. And so they call them life essence, or they call them spirit essence, or life spirit, you know, but they don't call them god and goddess. For all intents and purposes, to make this more understandable, I call them gods and goddesses because I understand what they mean. But just to clarify those points, because, you know, you might find a scholar who is very stern and look at you and say, these are no gods and goddesses. Whoever taught you that? So that's a little information. But anyway, going back to the origin of the Day of the Dead, we already know the big, big importance that Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlacahuatl play on the creation of man. So now raise your hand if you like Day of the Dead, and then I can see in my head like a lot of hands being raised right now. And so everybody likes Day of the Dead because, you know, it's a very nice celebration. It's 2 days. Think about having Day of the Dead for 2 months. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, yeah.
I, for one, will be the happiest person in the world because it's 2 months long. Well, 2 months long was the original length of the celebration. So let me read a little bit here so I don't get lost. The Day of the Dead celebrations in Mexico can be tracked back by to the indigenous rituals celebrating the deaths of ancestors and have been observed by this civilization for as long as 2,500 to 3,000 years. It's believed that in the pre-Hispanic era, it was common to keep the skulls as trophies, you know, from war, to display them during the rituals to symbolize death and rebirth. This layer was substituted, obviously, by the most politically correct sugar skull. The festival that became the modern Day of the Dead fell in the 9th and 10th months of the Aztec calendar, about the beginning of August, so we are just about entering those 2 months, about the beginning of the August, and was celebrated for an entire two-month period. The festivities were dedicated to the goddess Mictlacahuatl, the Lady of the Dead. The dates were as follows. From July 24th to August 12th, in the 9th month called Tlazochimaco, which means the birth of flowers, there was a celebration called Micahuitontli, or Festival of the Young Death, in which they will present offerings, feasts, and dances in honor of the dead, and offerings to Huitzilopochtli. Huitzilopochtli is the sun god. Tezcatlipoca was also honored. Tezcatlipoca is the god of darkness, or the god is also... I tend to compare these deities to other more non-deities, so people kind of like understand. So think about Huitzilopochtli as, you know, the sun god or the Mithras or any god deity. And Tezcatlipoca was more like, think Hecate-like, kind of like dark and mysterious, crossroads and showing you the truth. And if you ever seen an Aztec, have you ever seen the Aztec calendar? Raise your hand if you've seen the Aztec calendar. Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how in the Aztec calendar there are two faces facing each other, one in front of the other at the bottom of it? Well, one of those faces is Tezcatlipoca, or the dark half of the day. The other face is Huitzilopochtli, also known as Quetzalcoatl, because the Aztec gods have lots of names. And so is the light and the dark. but it's just as the Oak King and the Holy King, or the half luminous part of the day and the other half that is dark. The myths are very similar, you know, because they're talking about that cycle of darkness and light, and then darkness again to follow light, to follow darkness, and so on and so forth till the end of times. So in this first month celebration, the Mikael Witontli, or the Day for the Young Dead, both of these gods were honored. And then there were festivals, and the festival was the harvesting time for a fruit that is called the shokot. The shokot is what we know as plums. You like plums?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay.
So plums were the whole tradition because of the plums, which is delicious.
Yeah.
So when the shokot or plum is cut, they will carve the trunk of the tree, and they will put flowers to adorn it. And it is believed that these were the very first type of offerings that were done for the dead. The second festival, or the second month, it will be from August 13th to September 1st in the 10th month, called Shokol Wetsi, or the great fall of the shokot fruit. I know that's a mouthful. The great fall of the plum. And there was a celebration called, this is hard for me to pronounce it, Way Mikael Wiltli, or the festival of the grown death. I know it's really hard to remember the names and the dates. So just think about the very first festival was for the young dead. The second festival was for the older death, or for the adults, if you will.
So to make the distinction, are you talking about for younger people, like children who have died, versus adults?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is, young people and adults. And both festivals were carried around the harvesting of the plum. And both festivals will have offerings on the tree. The adult festival will have young adults climbing the tree and knocking down the fruit. And it was kind of like a rite of passage for young males. And it was obviously a big old harvest celebration. There were feasts, there were festivals, there were a lot of food. And it is believed, depending on which school of thought you adhere to, some people believe there was human sacrifice. Some people are very adamant to say there was no human sacrifice. I leave that open to you. I don't have a problem with either, because that was the beliefs, if those were the beliefs back then. Nowadays,
right,
we don't do human sacrifices anymore, obviously. You know, we do sugar skulls.
I mean, to keep it in context for the time, the whole culture, the Aztec culture, was very warrior-centered. They went to war often. Blood sacrifice was a common practice. So it wouldn't surprise me if that is also what went on. You know, if it didn't take great, but if it did, well, you know, that's just another aspect of their culture. So
yes, absolutely. And I often say, you know, I do not have a problem with that, because number one, I wasn't there, so I cannot tell if it was one way or the other. But I know scholars who are very adamant to deny that there was no blood sacrifice. And I'm like, great. We can't change the past. And the Aztec was not the only culture that actually have that practice. You know, there are other cultures in the world that were, as you said, warriors, and they have human sacrifice. But anywho.
Right.
So this is what is believed. These two festivals, or these two celebrations, one for the younger death, one for the older death. So think about teens, tweens, and toddlers, and even infants were celebrated on the first month. The second month was for young adults, and then, you know, adults, and obviously the elderly. And this went on and on and on for over 2,500 to 3,000 years. And when the person died, it was customary to be buried with the things that will serve you on your journey to the Mictlan. As I was telling you earlier, there are 9 levels to go and encounter the Mictlan. And you were buried with the tools that people believe that you could utilize to go into all these trials and find your way into the Mictlan. It is very, very similar to the Egyptian tradition, where they were buried with even their pets and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The difference, though, is to honor your ancestors. At this time of the festivity, they will gather the skulls. They will clean them. It is believed that this was taking place, you know, that the skulls were clean and they were cleansed and they were put top and center of the offering and the celebration. And then when the Spaniards came, I figure a couple have a heart attack. And then probably the ones that survived, they were like, oh, no, you're not going to do this skull shenanigans, and here's the sugar skull. You know, and then we have the most politically correct sugar skulls.
Right.
What happened with the Day of the Dead is the exact same thing that happened to Samhain back in Europe. When the Catholic Church saw the practice, they were, I will say, a little bit scared, to say the least. And they decided, no, you're not going to have this festivities of harvest and death, because they did not understand that it was death and rebirth. And they saw death as macabre and mysterious and bad. So they banned the festivities, but they couldn't ban the festivities altogether. And what they ended up doing is they move them from their actual calendar days to All Souls Day, which is November 2nd, and All Saints Day, which is November 1st, which is the exact same thing that happened with Samhain. So in my personal opinion, when people either in either side of the border say, oh, you shouldn't mix Samhain with Day of the Dead, or you shouldn't mix Day of the Dead with Samhain. Well, if you know where the festivities come from and you understand the origin of both, and you understand that they were both moved by the church to those days, why not? They are both harvesting festivities. And there are both festivities that talk about death and rebirth and the toiling of the soil and the burying of the bones of the ancestors to be revered and celebrated, and then to get known by the youngest generations, because without Samhain and without Day of the Dead, my great-grandchildren would never hear my name, you know.
That's a good point.
One of the things I know that people do in the modern Day of the Dead celebrations is they will have an altar set up, you know, with pictures of their family members and loved ones and things like that, but also their favorite foods. Where did that come from? Is that more modern, or did they do something similar,
earlier times, yeah.
Well, I figure, you know, when they're talking about this celebration of the harvesting of the plum, there was a feast, and there was celebration, and there were people eating and in community, you know, together. It is my guess that that driving to putting fruit on the altar, because when the Christianity came, a lot of the traditions just meld together. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a whole lot of the Aztec tradition was lost, especially if you go to the rural traditional areas in Mexico. It is an amazing display of creativity and tradition and the passion that people put into this day, because I know we call it the Day of the Dead because it's technically 2 days, but it takes at least a week, if not more, for some families to prepare for these days. So when you were asking if the food comes from these traditions, I believe it does, because it was originally a feast of harvesting. Now, a very peculiar belief now, and this I have to tell my joke again, Mexico, the most pagan country, just don't tell the Mexicans. Okay? Because that P word is really, you don't do that P word. It's really bad. But, you know, they all celebrate Day of the Dead. So there's a lot of things that crossed over with Christianity. And just to mention a couple, the altars will have different levels. Unfortunately, we don't have the visual for the altars, but you can always Google Day of the Dead altar and you will see that they have different levels, different tables at different levels. Some altars will have two levels, representing the underworld and the overworld, if you will, or mm-hmm. heaven and earth. Three levels will be heaven, earth, and the underworld, or in the more Christian tradition, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Seven levels, because as the Mictlan will have nine levels to be reached, the heavens or the above levels is seven layers. So the tradition or the myth says first you go nine levels underground to the Mictlan, and then when you're called into life again, you have to go seven levels up into the heavens. So there's a lot of up and down going on.
There is. There's a lot of climbing going on. I guess you have to be physically fit even when you're dead.
There's a lot of workout doing. But, you know, the Aztecs with the pyramids, there was nothing for them, you know, going up and down. I made a point, and I didn't mean this with any disrespect. Au contraire, it was my homage to the Lincoln Memorial. But I made a point to going up the stairs in the Lincoln Memorial Aztec style, which is like sideways.
Okay.
Because that's the easiest way to climb anything, especially if the steps are narrow.
Uh-huh. All right.
If you go sideways, it's easier, and you can go faster. So I made a point to climb the Lincoln Memorial that way. Anyway. Picture of the ancestors. Obviously, I'm assuming the picture of the ancestors was better than the actual skull.
Yeah, probably so.
The cross. Now, important thing is the Catholic Church has their cross, obviously. But a lot of these people would put a cross of salt on the ground. And it's believed that the cross of salt is to purify the ground. And that sounds very pagan to me.
Yes, that P word again.
That P word, but don't tell the Mexicans. Incense or copal, obviously. The copal is the quintessential resin to purify. And copal had to be present at the ceremonies. Now, there's an arch that goes above the altar, and this arch is usually made with flowers. We call it the cempasúchil flower. People know it as marigold, the marigold flower.
Right.
And this arch is believed to be the gateway between the two worlds. Kind of like the veil. Interesting,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? Okay. Now we have this papel picado. I don't know if you know what that means. It literally translates as perforated paper. If you ever go to a Mexican restaurant, just look up. You'll see it there. It's this traditional paper that is just pressed and cut to have voided light or voided spaces that let light through and you can see a figure. And
oh, yeah.
these were believed to be there to represent the element of air. Again, I keep seeing Okay. And then another element that also did the crossover was candles, obviously. The fire or the element of fire to purify, a guiding light to represent the four directions. So usually a traditional Day of the Dead altar is going to have four candles, one on each corner. Because for the Aztecs and for the Mayans and for the Incans and for most of the Latin American native people, the four quarters have to be represented all the time. And those four quarters talk about balance, the balance on earth. And, you know, it's to me, when I started reading about Wicca and paganism, I was like, oh my God, it's the same thing. You know, there's a few differences, but I think it's mostly the same. Anyway, water. You will have water to purify and talk about renovation and cycles, life and death, you know, a glass of water for the thirst. And also when we are born, we come into water. So it represents that too. And in some places, they will put a container with water, soap, and a towel. So the deceased one, the spirit, could come and clean themselves because, you know, they've been underground and they're probably dirty.
Oh, wow.
So they will have a towel and soap and a little bucket of water so they can clean themselves.
How
and
interesting.
Also,
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah,
really
that is amazing.
Well, yeah, I guess you know, you're going to get kind of dirty and grubby when you're underground. So
yeah.
In the underworld. Yeah.
Even if it is just your spirit.
Right.
You want to have it clean before you enter the home.
Well, you know, that's always a good idea. I've been underground for like 10 years and you know, I'd really like to clean up before we have our feast.
Yep.
Right.
Another thing that is beautiful is the extra cup of water. And this is specifically put down on the ground for that soul, for that deceased person that has no more life relatives, because there's the chance that there's going to be a soul walking around that can find their relatives because their family died off.
Okay.
And so there is offer a cup of water as a sign of, hey, if you don't have family, you're welcome here.
Oh,
we remember you and we invite you. Kind of like the unknown soul. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Flowers, obviously the marigold is the quintessential flower. It's called, in Mexico, we actually call it Flor de Muerto, or the flower of the dead. We don't call it marigold. It has a specific name. It has its proper name, which I don't even know, because nobody call it its proper name. We all call it Flor de Muerto or Cempasúchil, which is the Nahuatl name. And in Mexico, there will be people, you know, the florists selling these flowers. They will start selling these flowers 2 to 3 weeks before the Day of the Dead.
Really?
And they will be on the cemeteries day in and out, with buckets and buckets and buckets and buckets of flour for you to buy, because that is the quintessential. That and the skull, obviously, the sugar skull or the craniums made of various materials, but that and the flour is like the number one thing. Then we have, obviously, the calaveritas. Do you know what calaveritas are?
No.
Calaveritas are the sugar skulls. The craniums, the skull.
Oh, yeah.
And so these calaveritas, or these little skulls, are made, now they make them of any material that you can think of. It could be papier mache. Did I pronounce that right? Okay.
Yes.
Sugar, crystal, stone, plastic, drawn, I don't know, printed on shirts, on your shoes, on everything, right? We see now.
We see it all over the place now. And that's where that comes from. It's funny. I don't think most people are really recognizing the fact that you do know that originally people dug up their relatives and cleaned off their skulls and put them on an altar. I'm sure people are not tracking that at all. It's kind of funny.
And also, it was not only the deceased family members, but it was also, and this is a theory, obviously. It was also theorized that it was the skulls of the people that they incarcerated and killed, obviously. They're prisoners. And those were some of the skulls that were kept as trophies. And as trophies, they will be shown off at the Day of the Dead.
Oh, okay. Like, look at all of the people I captured in war and...
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is something that... Let me remember the... I don't want wallpaper, no. I want wall. There is a skull wall that is called Tzompantli. Ha, ha, ha. I'm just going to leave this here on the chat so you can Google it later.
Oh, great. Okay.
Google that.
Oh, I never would have gotten that right. I didn't even see that Z there. Okay.
Tzompantli is a wall that is covered with skulls.
Oh, I see.
It's just a little bit of intimidation in case
like
you were
stone and things, yeah.
Yeah, in case you were coming to the Aztec.
Yep.
Think about you're just passing by and you see that and you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep going. I don't want to cause any trouble. Just passing through. Bye. That's why they asked the grain for so long, because, you know, they were very subtle.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. You do see that all over the place in, I'm looking at an image from Chichen Itza,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure there's a bunch of other places, too.
Right.
So it's pretty
mm-hmm.
common. Yeah.
Yeah. And very, if you ever heard of the catacombs in France, is the exact same thing. And the exact same motive, you know, to kind of like, don't mess with us, or you'll be there. But anyway, the calaveritas, or the skull... you know, sugar skull. Now, here's what it gets very interesting for us Mexicans, and that a lot of the world is catching up on, I hope. But I hope that in my heart, the hope is that they understand where it comes from. Say I love you guys, right? And you are my friends, and I really wish you a very long, happy life. So on Day of the Dead, I'm going to come to your house with a sugar skull, and on the forehead of the sugar skull is going to say, David, And the second sugar skull is going to say, Jeanette, because I love you and you're my friends and I want you to live long, happy life. So here's your sugar skull. Here's your cranium with your name on. For other cultures, it's really morbid. It will be like, what the? Why are you giving me a skull with my name on? This is crazy. You know, Laura, are you an evil witch or what's going on? No, it's because I love you and because you're my friend and because I want to celebrate life with you. So here's a sugar skull with your name. And I would love to have one back, you know, with my name.
Wow.
I know it's kind of like out there for a lot of people, like, huh. But that's how we celebrate life, because it is a celebration of life. It's not a celebration of death.
And I've seen this on different TV shows, you know, on Discovery and these sort of things. They'll talk about the whole, there'll be specials on the whole celebration and stuff. And you'll go down to in Mexico City and all those other Mexican towns, and the way it is celebrated, it's an interesting thing to see from a cultural perspective, because the skulls are everywhere. People are dressed up in the skeletons. Now, there is a name for those little figurines and the way people dress up in the full skeleton suit regalia, like with the fancy clothes and
face painted up.
Face paint,
like
there's probably a name for that. I don't know what it is, but I've seen that culturally for a while, where, you know, that's all part of the celebration is doing that. And you know, I'm sure people here are doing it because they think it's cool, but I would like to think, hopefully, that most of the Latino populace knows what the origins are and, you know, why that's such a big thing.
You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion now. There is an imposter on the loose. No, I shouldn't say that. There is a cult that is very, very new, and like every other cult in the world, I have nothing but respect for it. But people get very confused between Day of the Dead and this character that is called Santa Muerte. And I would rather not to talk about that, because I don't like to put energy towards it. But just to clarify, nothing to do with the Day of the Dead, nothing to do with the culture of life and the celebration of life and celebration of harvest. This is an entity that is mostly used to do harm, and that they say is very miraculous. And what I tell people when they ask me, I say, well, there's a difference between a goddess and a saint. And this goddess is 3,000 years old, if not more. And it's a goddess of caring and mothering and loving and nurturing our ancestors, those keeping our DNA, our history, our families safe. And there is this amazing culture of life and celebration of life and celebration of ancestry that has nothing to do with the narco culture and the cartels and the drugs and all of that other stuff that has nothing to do with Day of the Dead. So that being said...
I think that's a good distinction to make, though. Definitely.
Yeah, well, and I respect anybody, and I respect a lot of people, and I even respect a lot of people who have come to me and said, well, Laura, I think you haven't really integrated the concept of death. And I just say thank you to them, because, you know, they encourage me to keep learning about this goddess and how she is all about celebrating life versus other deities or entities that have a very negative connotation. And unfortunately, the same people who are feeding this entity's blood, because this is real blood offering, you know, through the cartels and all that. The very people who are being oppressed, they are the ones who are being encouraged to worship. And they don't know who or what they are worshiping. And it's really sad. It's really, really sad. And it's spreading like a wildfire. And so, you know, I just have to clarify this because when people see me wearing skulls all the time, I have had people who ask me, oh, you revere Santa Muerte, right? And I'm like, no.
Different. Yeah.
Different skull, different lady. You know, completely different deity. But anyway, let's go back to the food, what you were asking earlier, Jeanette. This is very interesting. Traditional food is made for the altars, and it's usually going to be something that the deceased liked. So for me, please, chicken fingers with ranch. And for you guys, I don't know what's your favorite food, but, you know, it will have to be your favorite food. And then, obviously, traditional food, you know, tamales, atole, pumpkin pie or pumpkin. There's a treat, a dessert that we made with pumpkin and dark sugar, and it's delicious. And it's also the bread, the very traditional bread that we make that is called pan de muertos.
That's in the shape of a skull, right?
Sometimes it's the shape of a skull. Now it's very modern that they put a little skull on top. But it was just like a little round shape and then four little elongated shapes kind of making a cross. And it's supposed to be the skull and the four limbs of the deceased.
Okay.
And again, I know for some people that will be like, oh, that's morbid. No, it's a celebration of life. And what more life than bread that comes from the grain, that comes from the ground, that is the grain you just harvest.
Right.
You know? And this bread also means generosity, you know, it's the gift of earth itself. And the person who makes the bread is usually be given as a gift also, you know, along with the sugar skull. But something that I find very interesting and I think is really cute in the traditions is the food will remain there for a couple of hours before everybody has a feast. It is believed that the deceased take the nutritional value of the food. So even if we feast on that food later, we will not have any nutritional value from that food. And I wonder why the deceased don't take the calories instead of the nutritional value.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And that kind of relates to some other traditions of leaving food out for others, like the fairy folk and other things, other traditions like that, to do a similar leaving food out for practice where you leave the food out, and the spirits, the fairies, the ancestors, whoever consume the energy of the food.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is why you don't consume it yourself afterwards, because there's nothing that has nothing for you then. You know, you've given it to the others, whoever they may be, and you know, once they've done with it, the food may still be there, but the energy from the food is gone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, we do eat the food. We, even if the nutritional value has been taken away, we still, you know, celebrate and we still eat the food. And I guess it's just the cultural thing, you know, because you spend, especially this traditional food, the mole, the real mole takes at least 6 hours to be made.
Oh, yeah, I know.
There's a lot of work involved.
We like our mole, and I've never even bothered trying to make it from scratch because it is a ton of work and roasting the peppers and cooking everything down. I've only seen it on TV shows. And there's a particular brand that I'll buy, and I by the Doña Maria. There's a couple of others I've seen. Mole and, well, tamales aren't a quick prepare food either.
No.
And there's a whole bunch of other things too. Probably other corn-based foods are a big thing as well. Now, yes, what our favorite foods are. I don't know. Do we have favorite foods? That's tough.
I think with you it would be an easy one would be pasta with a cream sauce.
Yeah, so probably,
Like a tortellini or
tortellini
something, ravioli
with a cream sauce.
Cream sauce, yeah.
Krispy Kreme donuts come to mind.
Right.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah.
You can never go wrong with the cream.
And what's your favorite drink? A liquor or otherwise?
Really favorite? Probably unsweetened iced tea.
Yeah.
We drink it so much.
Yeah.
I'd say even more than the iced coffee. Just unsweetened iced tea. Although liquor, boy, that would have to be anything with Bailey's Irish Cream in it.
Right.
There you go. So for me it would probably be top liquor would be the liqueur. Bailey's Irish Cream, followed by maybe rum.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'd say Bailey's is probably up there.
Or just the unsweet tea.
Or just good old unsweet tea. Lipton.
I'll have to say, for me, there is no mistake. People who know me know I drink nothing but Diet Coke and Bacardi rum. The H one, please. The one that is called Añejo. Or else I will come very upset.
Not just the regular, you know, run of the mill.
It's got to be that dark rum, that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, the good stuff, the aged one. Yeah.
Right.
The one that every time I go to the store and I ask if they have añejo, people look at me like, huh? Aged. But it's just in Spanish, you know. But that's the name of the liquor. Anyway,
okay.
let's not go too far away from the topic. So another calaverita, remember calaverita I told you earlier is the skull, right? But another use of the word calaverita is short poems, which are mocking epithets for friends, describing interesting habits or attitudes or funny anecdotes of the person. This is done, again, out of love and to honor you. So, for example, we call the death, we don't call the goddess by her proper name, obviously. Some call her Katrina, some call her La Flaca, which means the skinny one or the bony one. And, o La Muerta, you know, the death one. But I like the La Flaca, you know, the skinny one. And so one example of these little poems will be La Flaca came and took Laura and took her to her final rest place. And while Laura didn't want to go, she was screaming, bring me my rum, please. You know? I mean, this was something stupid I just made up. But usually there are people who are dedicated poets who write this little poem thingies. They're usually 4 to 8 line verses. And you know how people here on the Groundhog Day, they will put the groundhog on the TV and it will be on news and all of that? Well, this happens in Mexico for Day of the Dead and these little poems, because they're usually very funny and very witty. And if it's about politicians, obviously it's satirical and it's politics, you know, political and satirical. And it will be on the news segment for that day, for the Day of the Dead, and probably the next day and the day before. You know, it'll be on the news. Everybody will be talking about it. Friends do it for friends, especially talking about embarrassing moments or funny moments or, you know, anecdotes, just to remember, it's a mock epithet, you know. And if you do that, obviously, it's because I love you, so I will make one for you. And, again, it's one of those things that other people from other cultures will look at us like, That's not funny. Yes, it is. It's super funny. And it's cute. Well, so think about all this fun stuff that I told you about the flowers and the food and the candles and all that. And sometimes all that is done at a house. And there will be, the doors will be open and, you know, we will be willing to receive the deceased ones, the death that come from the resting place and come to visit that day. But 90% of the people do all that at the cemetery. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
Think about cemeteries in Mexico a week or two prior Day of the Dead. They are like festival scenes. People are cleaning the tombs. They will be painting them. They will be putting fresh flowers. They will be constructing a fence to the grave. They will be cutting the weeds, just beautifying the rest in place of their deceased ones. And when night comes, it will be a mariachi or a trio or an orchestra or what have you. It is a nonstop party. And this happened at the cemetery. Obviously, the cemetery, those nights don't close. They're open all night because people will spend the whole night partying with their deceased ones.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And we used to live in San Diego, and we would hear about it and see it in the news where people would go and
visit
the graves and the loved ones and have a picnic there and all kinds of stuff.
Clean them off and take care of them and everything,
Yep. And odd, and I know this might be hurtful, you know, just to think about, but if you were to have a kid that was, you know, that died, maybe a toddler or younger, they will bring toys for the kids. And they will place them in the tomb and they will sing lullabies and they will. It is a day of mourning, but it's also a day of remembrance. And I think that if you go to the very serious aspect of it, I heard it sometime of one of those documentaries. As you said, Jeanette, earlier, there's a ton of documentaries in this. And this psychologist, whose name escapes me, was saying this is a very healthy way to mourn your deceased loved ones because you give yourself the permission to remember them one day or two, but it's not necessarily sadness that overcomes you, but it's rather the memories of happiness and the life that was shared with them. And as I was saying earlier, I think it's a great way to get that generation gap to disappear because I might not have known my great-grandparents, but maybe my parents remember them. And if my kids are around on that celebration, my kids will know that my great-grandparents like to drink, I don't know, coconut water or that their favorite TV show was I Love Lucy. You know, I mean, stuff that is remembered by those who are still alive that is probably been passing from generation to generation and that the youngest ones probably would have never known if they were not around on Day of the Dead. So I think it's an amazing tradition. I myself, I'm very proud to be able to celebrate both Day of the Dead and Samhain. Personally, I do not see a problem with having witches on Day of the Dead or sugar skulls on Samhain, as long as we know where this all comes from and where the origins of the holiday. And then people like me and like you, Jeanette, who are part of both cultures, I mean, I transplanted myself here 17 years ago. It will be impossible not to celebrate Halloween or Samhain or all three of them, you know. But just to understand, not to just do it because everybody else is doing it and wearing a skull suit just because everybody else is doing it, but to know that it's a celebration of life, harvesting, and that it's an ancient Aztec tradition, is not something that was made or created 200 years ago or 100 years ago. And last but not least, I want to say a couple more things before we, if we still have time to talk about tarot, I would love to, but there is
pretty much.
We
basically used up our hour and then some here, so we might actually have to use that one. You cover that in another evening, because I mean, I thought that this discussion of the Day of the Dead was probably going to take the full time, if not even more so, because this is such a fascinating topic that, we're both very interested in personally, so we could probably talk about this for another hour or two even. So, yeah.
No, let me just do the two final topics. I'm pretty sure you all have seen the quintessential image of this female skull with a beautiful hat with feathers, and we call
right.
it La Catrina. Catrina means literally fancy lady. And this fancy lady, or elegant skull, is an etching on zinc. It's not a painting. It's an etching made in between 1910 or 1913. The author, the artist's name is Jose Guadalupe Posada, and the image depicts a female skeleton dress, but as I was telling you earlier, that they make a mockery of people or whatever is happening politically in the nation, and this fancy skull was making fun of the Mexican people who were trying to look like they were French, because that French culture was taking over Mexican tradition. So he dressed the skull in this fancy outfit as a mockery of, you know, the dead, as a mockery of the culture. And then it was Posada who said, death is democratic, because at the end of the day, it don't matter if you're blonde or brunette, rich or poor, everybody ended up being a skull. And it was just his way of making fun of the culture. And it has become the quintessential image for Day of the Dead. He didn't mean for it to be religious or spiritual, but it has just become kind of like they go hand in hand. He has more art with skeletons and skulls, and is really a name to Google if you want to learn about him a little bit more. So the name is Jose Guadalupe Posada. And he made the face, and then it was Diego Rivera, who later, like 30 years later, gave her a body. And when he drew her with a body, he gave her this very fancy dress, and he gave her a stole or a scarf that is made out of feathers. But that scarf is actual representation of Quetzalcoatl, because it's the body of a snake but with feathers. And Quetzalcoatl is the feather snake. So it's kind of like going full circle. You know, we began talking about Quetzalcoatl, and at the end of the day, at the end of the conversation, you know, Quetzalcoatl appears again. And to show us how death and life go, obviously, hand in hand. And last but not least, in 2008, the tradition was inscribed in the representative list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity by UNESCO. So I invite you all to celebrate and to incorporate it. Now you know more about the festivity, and you can share all you heard today with your friends and family. And don't forget, and this phrase is mine, and I have to say it's mine because I think it's my masterpiece. And what are we under the skin if not skulls with never-ending smiles?
There you go.
So, there you go.
Yeah. So let's celebrate Day of the Dead, Samhain, Halloween, whatever you want to do, but celebrate life.
Exactly. Because death is an aspect of life. It's part of the whole life cycle and stuff. you know, anyway, so that is, I think it's totally appropriate to include that in the celebration of life.
Awesome. Well, I obviously ate up the whole hour talking about Day of the Dead. if people want to reach out, ask me or ask me for names or anything, you all know where to. I live in Facebook. I go out to the real world once in a while. But through Facebook, or they can send me an email at tarotbylaura@hotmail.com. And if you have any questions or if you want any parts of this workshop and they want to have it like a hard copy, I can certainly facilitate that for you.
Great.
Awesome.
Cool.
And if you want me to come back and talk about tarot, I would love to.
Probably sometime in the next few months, we can certainly have you back to do a show.
Awesome. That'll be my pleasure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So we can have a talk about the tarot is a healing tool. That would be a really good topic to get into. We just didn't get a chance to tonight because there's so much to say about the Day of the Dead and the whole practice. And as we have cycled into the harvest time of the year, it's kind of appropriate to be moving into that direction with our conversations and stuff anyway. So that's cool.
Yep. Totally.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Laura, for joining us tonight. We want to thank Witches School and Pegasus Tonight Radio for allowing us to have this programming time. We'd like to thank everybody who listened in. We had a number of people on the live chat this evening, which was great to see. And we know folks will be downloading this later on and listening to it in their own time, which is perfectly acceptable and welcome. And we enjoy that, providing that opportunity as well. Laura had some great information about the Day of the Dead practice. We learned a lot ourselves, and I think it's just something that we're probably going to talk more about in the future months and years down the road as we go through. So what else do we have to say here? We've got next week we'll have Florence on from Circle Sanctuary. She will be talking about the workshops that she was scheduled to teach at PSG. Some were very, as she put it, might be kind of dry. It was about fundraising and stuff, that kind of stuff that the about aspects of leading a pagan organization that are not really the pagan related things like fundraising and publicity and that kind of business. And she had some other conversations that she was going to lead that she was going to talk about next Tuesday.
Yes, we will be, and next week also we will be continuing the series with Nature Magic with the previously broadcast episodes from Selena on various things. And what is it going to be next week?
So next week on August 11th, there will be the ritual uses of herbs. This is a replay from episode number 69, where she talked about the uses of herbs in ritual practice. And after that, we'll be working with Plant Allies on the 18th and Herbs for Divination on the 25th. So August is Herb Magic Month for Nature Magic with Selena Fox, and we're still continuing the PSG extended release on Circle Talk, talking to the presenters that were scheduled to present at PSG. We'll have Wendy Rule on in 2 weeks, and I think it's and then Jerry Hildebrand will be joining us on August 25th to talk about listening for the sacred and setting yourself aside. So we've got quite a lineup to get through August here, so stay tuned.
All righty.
And we'll close out tonight with a song by Celia called The Ancestor Dance. Celia is a big PSG favorite and a Circle favorite, and she's got a song about the Ancestor Dance. So thank you, Laura. Thank you, everybody else, for joining us.
And we will see you next week
on Circle Talk Radio.
Good night.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you.
promise to keep on
Network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.